Thank you. First, I'd like to thank Jenny Garza. Jenny is a postdoc working with me, and she did a lot of the heavy lifting for this project. She's also done a lot of heavy lifting lately as she's out on maternity leave with a healthy 5-month-old baby boy. Today, I'm here to present some work that we've done looking at the time course of heart rate variability response to PM2.5 exposure from secondhand smoke. No disclosures. And this work was funded by a variety of NIHS grants when I was at Harvard School of Public Health, and also through the Flight Attendants Medical Research Institute that funds studies looking at the health effects of secondhand smoke. So there's not a lot of background to these slides, because I don't know if you've heard this, but secondhand smoke causes disease. Yeah. We know that. We know that exposure to secondhand smoke, whether it be in the environment or the workplace environment, causes adverse chronic health cardiovascular outcomes. However, what we don't quite know is exactly the mechanism of that. So we know that there's some inflammation involved. We know that this inflammation may or may not be implicated in cardiovascular autonomic system response, and that this activation may lead to lower heart rate variability. So we all know what our heart rate is, right? Well, heart rate variability is the changes in the beat-to-beat minutes of your heart. And unlike other physiological parameters where low is better, low heart rate variability is not better, because you want your body to be able to respond to everything that's going on outside of you. You want to be able to jump up if you need to. So you want high heart rate variability. So what we decided to look at is how those secondhand smoke exposures affect the changes in the heart rate through the heart rate variability, and the time course of this response. Now you might be saying, okay, well, we know secondhand smoke causes cardiovascular disease. Why do we care when it does? Well, how many out here are industrial hygienists? Do we have some industrial hygienists? Okay, where do we usually sample? Breathing zone over the work shift. Okay, we have any physicians or epidemiologists? When do we usually take a health sample? Later. After the work shift. Right. We've kind of come to just expect that workers are exposed only throughout the day, and guess what? They're magically always going to have that response after a work shift. Well, things might not always go that way. So understanding the time course of when a person responds to an exposure such as secondhand smoke helps us perform better epi studies. And understanding something that we know causes a health effect, like secondhand smoke, may help us understand other things that are like secondhand smoke. And you'll see I work with a group of boilermaker welders, and understanding what secondhand smoke does may help us understand what welding fume does. So the objective of this presentation, or this analysis rather, was to investigate that time course of the association between secondhand smoke-related PM2.5 exposure and heart rate variability. We hypothesized that this exposure would lead to lower heart rate variability, and there'd be some changes in that time course. So what we did is a repeated measures panel study. Being good industrial hygienists and occupational epidemiologists, we measured over the work shift, 0 to 6 hours. Secondhand smoke exposure, and then we had them wear a 24-hour ambulatory electrocardiogram to measure changes in their cardiovascular autonomic response. We recruited non-smoking participants from a union hall of boilermaker construction workers who are trained to weld on round vessels, and we actually had these boilermakers monitored while they were in a training school. As part of their apprentice program, they have to do book work. And during that book work, they're allowed to smoke. So this is their secondhand smoke-only exposure. What we did to get a good reading of that exposure was we put on a side pack aerosol monitor, and the beauty of the technique we used is that the aerosol monitor gives you a minute-to-minute data, how much PM2.5, and the heart rate variability monitor gives you minute data every 5 minutes. So we were able to have a really fine reading of both the exposure and the outcome, the heart rate variability. Then you get a whole lot of data points. And while all this data is fabulous, it's really hard to work with. So then we crunched our data a little bit more. We took the PM2.5 exposures and we did some moving averages for each participant, 15, 30, 60, 120, 180, and 240 for each participant. There's the electrocardiogram, and like I said, there are 5 minute intervals, and there's five different parameters we looked at, all which give a subtly different change or give us some a little different information about how the heart's responding. So we used linear mixed regression models, and we took the 15 to 240 moving average of PM2.5, we linked it with the 5 minute HRV data, and we looked for associations. We, of course, added a random effect for each participant to account for the correlation within each individual's own heart rate variability measure. We assumed an autoregressive covariance structure, and we log transformed our data because it was skewed. And this is what we found. These are our participants. We had a total of 35 participants. They were a mix of participants, with almost 30% indicating they had some cardiovascular or health risk. They were a range of ages, 21 to 71, mean of 44, a range of BMI, and their PM2.5 exposure had a mean of 0.17 and of milligrams per meter cubed, so it's pretty high, and 0.39 standard deviation. This is the data that we found. So what I have here is two of the HRV measures. The first one is SDNN. The second one is RMSSD. Each of these are the moving averages fit from 15 to 240 minutes. And these are the beta coefficients indicating the relationship between the HRV and the exposure model after adjusting for age, BMI, and time of day. And interesting, what we see is as we expected. When we look at the moving average of the 15 minutes prior exposure and your current HRV in that 5 minutes, we saw a decline, a negative association. So for every increase in PM2.5, we saw that decline in HRV we thought we would. And this also extended into the 30-minute time point for the RMSSD, another measure of HRV. What was interesting is that when we expanded the moving average for the PM2.5 up to 120 minutes, so we looked at the past 2 hours of exposure and how it affects your HRV right now, we saw the opposite effect. So we saw an increase in HRV with an increase in exposure. And then when we get further out, we saw it drop down again. So we see this multimodal phase in our response. And this actually was, this is for the other measures, LF power, HF power, and the ratio, and we see something quite similar with an initial negative response followed by a positive response and then a negative. So we observe negative significant associations in the immediate short-term exposures of 15, 30, and 60 minutes, as well as that long-term exposure of 240. But we also observed some positive significant associations between the 120-minute and PM2.5 moving averages. So these findings support our hypothesis that secondhand smoke does affect the cardiovascular system, and it indicates that there may be a multi-phase response to this. So depending on when you look, you may in how you account for the different exposure periods, you might be picking up some different subtleties in the body's response. So this study is strengthened by the fact that we had secondhand smoke exposure that was personally monitored, and these findings are actually consistent with what we see in air pollution, where sometimes, since the autonomic response may be in part due to both the direct response of the particles on the cardiovascular autonomic system, which may be the immediate phase, as well as an inflammation response, which may be a more delayed phase, as what is seen in air pollution. We also took the cardiovascular and health compromised individuals out of our associations in a sensitivity, or out of the cohort in a sensitivity analysis, and it indicated that these people didn't seem to be driving the results. And one limitation is that we assumed that secondhand smoke was the primary component of the PM2.5, but there may have also been air pollution exposures or other types of PM2.5 sources. So I want to thank you for your attention. Any questions?
For the age of these values, a point source, like was it a point data set, or did you average it over that time?
So the question was whether the HRV data was a point set or averaged over time. So they were five-minute values. So for the 24-hour period, we had a five-minute value for each of the minutes. 5 minutes for each participant over 24 hours. And then the corresponding moving average of PM2.5. Yes, Lee?
Are there any other questions?
Not that would be correlated with the PM2.5 exposure. So because we have the PM2.5 exposure so variable, it's unlikely to be associated with the randomness of stress and other things. To be honest, it's actually quite, I say doing book work, but there was also a lot of card work being done too. It was a relaxed setting.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we should have a standard for 2.5, an occupational exposure standard for 2.5?
Hmm.
I know, I mean, it's very important in the air pollution literature, but I've just never seen it really analyzed. And these could be very significant cardiovascular findings of importance in a whole variety of work settings. I mean, I'm kind of being facetious.
Yeah.
That's where my mind is going.
Yeah, I mean, it's... No, I think the PM2.5 exposure is an important, or it's a useful, I should say, way to characterize particles that make their way down into the lungs to cause a health response. But whether or not a particle is not a particle, a welding fume particle, it may be similar to secondhand smoke particle. If inflammation is involved, then we need to know much more about the particle than just the size to understand what potential it has to have for a health effect. So that's a hard question to answer. I'm going to punt on that one. Yes, sir.
Yeah, what would be the long-term impact of those evasive exposure to?
Long-term exposure does produce a cardiovascular risk. The most recent, I think it was 2010, the Surgeon General's report on secondhand smoke exposure is a very comprehensive listing, and it includes both short-term and long-term effects. And so I think that's a great resource. Thank you.
Thank you.